We are holding on Kofiud Beys on the Beys. Now, 10 lines, 11 lines for the bottom. Line in the khaki. We're in the middle of discussing the procedure of what happens when Beistin is summoning somebody to Beistin. He's stalling for time, or maybe he's not necessarily stalling. We said yesterday he may argue that he has a valid claim that, let's say, for example, the shtar that they're bringing against him is forged, etc. So we went through so far the process. You have to wait a certain period of time. Eventually, you write an adrasta. Eventually, if he still doesn't pay up, eventually you come to the point of writing an adrasta, a shtar that gives the malva or whatever it is, the person who's owed money, the right to go and look for nechasim of this guy and take him. So, the Gemara continues, v'chikas vin an adrasta. When we write such an adrasta, mud'inimli, we have to inform him. Some Mepharshim learn that it's talking about always, meaning even if we're talking... remember, this adrasta only happens, we said yesterday there's two possibilities. The normal procedure is, for example, in the case of a milva, you're going to wait 90 days before you write the adrasta, so you need to give the guy time to borrow money, to sell things, to raise money for the other person he's selling things to raise money, etc. So the other possibility we said is if he said I'm not coming to begin with, then there's no reason to wait the whole 90 days and he writes the adrasta immediately. So we're saying now you have to inform him. So some Rishonim learn that it means in either case, even if you gave him the whole 90 days and everything, still before you're going to write the adrasta, you have to inform him. Others say that it means no, we were talking only about the last case where he said I'm not going to come, then you have to inform him. If already the 90 days have passed, then he knows already that an adrasta is coming.
Some say only if he refuses.
Behind the Mila de Makadim, this that we're talking about, you have to inform him before writing the adrasta, is only if he's nearby. How near is near, we'll talk about soon. Avam Mirachas Loi, but if he's far away, then not. Because you can't expect the Baal Choyv to wait until you can get in touch with him.
Even today, that would apply?
No, the Pashtus not. The Pashtus, everybody today would be considered Kari. You can call them up, you know. That's what the Gemara is going to say. V'imirachas v'ikka krovim, if he's far away, but he has relatives over here, so therefore if they inform the relative, the news will get to him. Or inami ikka shayauti da'azli v'asu hasam, or there are caravans that regularly go between here and there, where this loiva is, where again, therefore, there's ways to inform him. Mashin le'treita yavche shata, then we delay things up to 12 months, long enough for the caravan to go and return. Because then at least, you know, you try to get a hold of the guy. So therefore, if it's going to take 12 months, then you do that. Kihad Ravina, as we have a case with Ravina, Shahar Lamar Acha Teresa Yavke Shata, he one time delayed a case involving Mar Acha. That was Rashi says that was the name of the guy. He was a Baal Choyv. He was a Malve. The Loiva was out of town. And he waited, Ravina waited, to write an adrasta treisa yafei shata for 12 months of the year, ad da'azli ba'afta shayartim be'chazoi, long enough for a caravan to be able to go to be'chazoi, which is where this guy was, and return. However, the Gemara says, v'loihi. That's not so. It's not necessarily a given that it's 12 months. Hasam inish alima hata. Because in that case, that was a special situation. This mar'acha was a powerful person. If you wrote him an adrasta, you wouldn't easily get it away from him. Or if he used the adrachta to take property just to satisfy the choyv, and then the guy came back to town, it wouldn't necessarily be that easy to get back the property, the real estate that he had taken for his choyv. So therefore, in that case, Ravina felt the best thing to do is wait as long as possible before writing the adrachta for him, give the guy a chance to come back and pay up before Mar'acha sees his property of his, and then you're not going to be able to easily get it back from him. That's what the Gemara says. You have him mark the adrachta liyade, if an adrachta would get into Mar'acha's hands, well, you have an actual apokim, you wouldn't be able to take it away from him, either the adrachta or the property, as the case may be. Basically, but yeah, so in other words, then it would make things very hard for the lawyer. Aval hocha, but it's over here, meaning in under normal circumstances, when it comes to normal situations, though, we don't necessarily wait that long. Actually, some Mepharshim say the other way around. Some Mepharshim say if we're discarding the 12-month thing, then it's not necessarily 12 months either. Conceivably, it could be even longer than 12 months, depending on the circumstances. But whatever. Under normal
circumstances,
but that's what we're saying. Not necessarily. There are some Mepharshim who learn that now. Aval hacha, but here, meaning in normal circumstances, We don't wait that long. What we say is, if we say the person is nearby, we have to inform him first. Nearby means lo natunin lay ella ad also shlicha b'tlasa b'shapsa. We only wait long enough for, we assume that the shliach Beis Din will leave on Tuesday, because presumably on Monday the Beis Din sat and decided that an adrachta needs to be written. So Tuesday they send out the shliach to inform him. He returns on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, he should be there for the Din Torah. And if he's not there, then they can write the Adrachta. But if he's any further away, then they don't bother because it's going to be too long anyway. The Rambam seems to have a different girsa, which is that if the guy is within 2 days away, apparently the Rambam, Parashim on the Rambam, the Mishnah Lamelech, explains that evidently the Rambam had a girsa that the Shliach Beis Din goes on Monday and Tuesday. Let's say Beis Din sits first thing Monday morning. So the Shliach travels the rest of Monday, all of Tuesday, informs the person, and returns Wednesday and most of Thursday, gets there towards the end of the day on Thursday, and again, if the guy isn't, if the guy isn't going to do the right thing, then they go ahead and write the address. A shliach of Beis Din, we believe like two aidim. Because Rashi says he's not going to lie in Beis Din. We believe him in the sense that, for example, if he went to summon somebody to Beis Din and the person says, I don't want to come, and you have one shliach Beis Din testifying to that, we believe him as the equivalent of two. At that point, for example, we can put him in Nidui, as we talked about yesterday.
A shliach Beis Din
comes back and believes as two people, in the sense that if he comes back and says, Pliny, who you sent me to summon to Beis Din, doesn't want to come, then Beis Din can take that as, okay, so, you know, that's the equivalent of two Adam testifying, therefore we can go ahead with proceedings.
They're drafted immediately, or the
Nidui, as we said yesterday, right. The next part of the process. However, this is only as true as far as putting the guy in Cherem. But as far as writing a star of Cherem, there's two different things. You can verbally put him in Cherem, as we said, and then you can write an actual star that makes it official. That makes it official that he's in Cherem. That, kibbid demona kamachasubai, in that case, you're causing him to lose money. Because this person who they write a star shamta against is not going to be released from his shamta. We said yesterday that after the 90 days, you release him from his shamta and go ahead with the adrachta procedure. Shamta is a form of nidui. It's a form of chayr.
Shamta,
shammeis, whatever. We learned it way back in my cotton a few years back. There's different levels. There's nidui, there's chayr, there's shamta. And it's a pretty severe level. Anyway, the point is, in order for him to be released from that, he would have to pay the sofer who wrote the shtar to begin with. In Bava Basra, in the last paragraph of Bava Basra, it talks about the various rules, who has to pay the schara sofer for various kinds of documents. This is one of them, because they had to write the document because he was intransigent and didn't want to come to Beis Din. Therefore, when he comes and wants the shamta to be released, he has to pay the schara sofer. That's money. That's going to cost him money. Since it involves costing him money, loy, then you can't believe a shliach Beis Din enough like two people to go so far as to write a psicha, a shtar shanta. To verbally put him in shanta, that yes, but not a psicha. For that you need two actual aiders that he didn't want to come. Not necessarily you don't believe, but to make a person lose money, you can't have one aid is not enough to take money away from somebody. Okay. More on this. Amar Ravina, Yehavinan Zimna Apuma De Itza. We can arrange a time, we can summon somebody to Beis Din to be there on a certain date, based on the word of a woman, or based on the word of the neighbors. Meaning, in other words, let's say the guy is out of town, but you have a woman, his wife or whoever, is going to be passing by, is going to be visiting him anyway, or his neighbors are going to be going to there and they're going to be visiting him. Beis Din can inform them, we need you to tell this person. They're not appointing them an official shliach Beis Din. They're just telling them, you should know, your husband or your neighbor or whatever it is, is supposed to appear on Beis Din on such and such a date. You can inform them, and based on that, if he doesn't come, then they can assume that he's not willing to come. The difference is,
it's just like a shliach Beis Din.
Some of Parshim say it's a little bit different than a shliach Beis Din. If they come back and say that he said he's not coming, that's not enough to put him in shamta. That's not enough to put him in chayrim. But it's enough, at least for us, to be able to say he did hear about it. If then he doesn't show up by the date, we, the Beis Din, can deal with it. But it's different than if the Shliach Beis Din, in other words, comes, let's say the Beis Din sat on Monday, and there's a Tuesday, the Shliach Beis Din comes and tells him, Beis Din wants to see you on Thursday, and he says, I'm not going to come. Beis Din can sit down right then and there on Tuesday and put him a chamta. Whereas if it's just neighbors or a woman or whatever, not an official Shliach Beis Din, they'd have to wait till he actually doesn't show up. And as we'll see soon, you give him several chances to show up as well. Because we can assume that as long as he knows that he's supposed to be doing it, we can be soimach on him. We didn't make them an official Shliach Beis Din, but we can still rely on them that they will carry out the shliach. However, the Gemara qualifies that. First of all, this only applies if this Toini who's being summoned to Beis Din is not in town. It's not that they're telling the wife or the neighbors, when you go to him, then you'll tell them. It means that, for example, when he comes back home and you see him, and then you see him back home, tell him that Beis Din wants to see him. So if he's not in town, that works. But if he's in town, then no, you cannot assume that just because he didn't show up means he was told that he's supposed to be there and disobeyed, and now you can put him in Shamta. Loi, we can't say the neighbors told him. We can say they might not have told him. Because they may figure, you know what, he's in town. The Shliach Beis Din could easily have found him and told him. We don't have to tell him. So they may think that they may think he already knows, and therefore that they don't have to carry out their Shliach. Furthermore, this only applies when he comes back home, he's not going to be passing by the door of the Beis Din. His route home from out of town does not involve passing by the Beis Din. But if he has to pass by the Beis Din, then no, again, you can't rely on the neighbors. Amri, because the neighbors may figure, actually, Beis Din of Amri, like, okay, as he passed by the Beis Din, they saw him passing by, and they themselves went and told him. Again, we don't have to tell them. The whole point is, in other words, that's the difference. Shliach Beis Din, you
we
know he was appointed an official.
Go to the Beis Din?
No, not we rely on him to go to the Beis Din. No. If he has to pass by, if his way home from wherever he is out of town happens to pass by in front of the Beis Din, now, previously, before he came home, Beis Din told the neighbors, when he gets home, tell him that we want to see him. But if he has to anyway pass by the Beis Din, the neighbors may not carry out that shlichus. So they'll figure, as he passes by the Beis Din, the Dayanim will see that he's passing by, and they'll tell him. Therefore, we don't need to. So now when he doesn't show up, you can't assume he's not showing up because of chutzpah, because he's disobeying the Dayanim. He may not have gotten the information. The Dayanim Taka didn't see him when he passed by, so they didn't tell him. The neighbors figured, you know, he kind of fell between the cracks over there. The Beis Din didn't see him when he passed by. The neighbors figured we don't need to, because Beis Din probably saw him, and so he never heard. Yeah, that's the point. No, if they formally appointed him, that's what we said before. That's Shliach Beis Din. That's when he's officially appointed as a shliach. Here it's sort of informally based in yes. Okay. Furthermore, all this only applies if the guy is going to be returning home that same day. But if he's not going to, if they tell the neighbors on Tuesday that he's expected to come home on Wednesday, tell him then no. Because you can say they may have forgotten. Before they told them on Tuesday, they told them on Monday, let's say, and by the time the guy came home, Tuesday or Wednesday already, they already forgot about it. So again, the fact that he didn't show up to the next session of Beis Din doesn't prove that he disobeyed. It may be that the neighbors forgot to tell him.
First day, the same day, they tell him that...
If Beis Din tells them on Monday, we know this guy is going to be returning home later today, tell him that we want to see him today, fine, then as long as we don't have the other conditions that we just mentioned, then we can assume the neighbors will tell us. But yes. Okay. If you write a psicha, when you get to the case, we actually have to write a shtar shamta on somebody because he didn't come to a din Torah, then ad osil dinah loy mekareinim. We do not rip up that shtar nidui and release him from nidui until he actually shows up at the Beis Din. Meaning, even if he says, for example, I'm coming, I'm going to come, that's not good enough. Very nice, you say you're going to come. Talk is cheap. Show up, then we'll be mad to you. Then we'll be mad to you. Especially because, I mean, the whole point is, when they write the psicha, he already refused to come to Beis Din. So him saying, I'm going to come is not enough. He has to actually show up. And furthermore, Aldalei Tzayis Ladina, furthermore, Rava says, if you had to write a psicha for him because he's not listening to the Beis Din, meaning it came to the point, they judged the Din Torah, they said, you're chayiv to pay, say tenoi, go out and give it to him, and he refuses to pay, then, and then again, there can be a case where they have to put him in cherim for that. Then again, until he actually obeys and actually pays out the money, we don't rip up the shtar nidui. However, that one, the Gemara says, actually, that the halacha is not like that last one. Because once he says, I'm going to listen, I'm going to pay, then we can already rip it up. The difference is, Rashi says, Mela, when he's not coming to Beis Din, what do you have to lose? You should, Beis Din is summoning you, you need to come. When it comes to paying, though, he may not have the money on hand. So he's working to get the money. So therefore, it doesn't show such a chutzpah to the Beis Din the fact that they told him, say, tain lo, and he hasn't paid yet. So therefore, fine, they can put a psicha on him to encourage him to hurry up and actually pay. But once he says, I'm going to pay, then we can accept that he's serious about it, and we must do the nidri at that point already.
And if he's not, we're still not going to pay.
If he's not what?
If he doesn't pay,
then we'll write a new psicha, as the case may be. There's different levels of nidui. This is the kind of nidui we're talking about over here. The shamta is not necessarily where like nobody's allowed to be within his four amas or something, you know.
It's a very low level.
It's not necessarily a low level. Nidui is the lowest level, but still, you know, it would be an unusual kind where Beis Din actually had to make it so severe like nobody's able to be within his dalat amas or whatever. Okay. Amar Rav Chisda. Kriven zman sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. We make appointments, meaning again, when we're summoning a person to Beis Din for Monday, Thursday, and Monday, yeah. Zimna, meaning one time, the Zimna, boss of Zimna, and another time, and then a third time, meaning we don't tell them all at once, you have to be here on Monday, and if not, then on Thursday, and if not, then the following Monday. On Monday, we tell them you need to be, we tell them beforehand, you need to be here on Monday. If he doesn't show up on Monday, we send him another shliach Beis Din or the neighbors or whatever the case may be and tell him that he needs to be there on Thursday. If he still doesn't, then the following Monday. Only if he doesn't show up after those three times do you write the psicha, do you write the shtar shamsa.
Yeah, I just want to say, most cases the guy says, well, for the next 3 months I'm not available, I can come in 4 months.
If he's out of town, that's different. We're talking about if he's in town. Whatever, that's why we give him three chances. Sometimes.
You appoint a chance.
Yeah. I mean, those are the days Beis Din sits, Monday and Thursday. So, yeah, he has to clear his calendar enough. You know, well, Abdul, it's like jury duty. You know, if they want you there on a certain date, you're not, you know, there's a limit how much you can say, well, I'm busy. You know, you've got to show up.
And jury, you can push it off like 3 days.
Fine, okay. The point is, so again, you know, you can push it off a couple of times, but whatever. Eventually, you got to show up. Yeah, okay. And then if he doesn't show up the third time, then the next day, Tuesday, we already write the shtar shamsa. The Gemara tells the case, and this kind of question, Rav Ashi, one time Rav Ashi visited the house of Rav Kahana, who was his Rebbe. He saw that there was a certain woman who had been summoned to Beis Din in the evening. And the next morning already, they were writing a psicha for her because she hadn't shown up the previous evening.
Well,
that's the question. That's the question. What happened to Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni? The Rambam, by the way, has the gears the other way around, that they had summoned her in the morning and in the evening already, they're writing a psicha. Same difference. So Rav Ashi tells him, like, what happened to what Rav Chisda said about Monday, Thursday, and Monday? Why are you writing a psicha already? Amalei says to him, Hani Milik Gavra, that's only talking about a man. The honest, like you're saying, he has an onus for less than Masa. It can happen. He's not in town. He's not in town one Monday, so therefore you have to wait for the next Thursday, the next Monday, etc. You have to give him a chance. Aval Itza, but a woman, given to Issa B'masa, since she's in town, Valayasya, and she's not willing to come, Meredithi, then we can take it as a given that she's rebellious and disobeying Beis Din. Which, by the way, Rishonim point out, it's not really a difference of men versus women, per se. It's a difference of what kind of business do they do. For example, if you have a woman who goes out of town on business, then she's in the same thing as a man. If you have a man who sits around the house, then he's the same as a woman. He needs to show up on the day that they summon him. The Rishonim, I think the Rosh talks about that, for example, already in his times, it was very common that women engaged in business. So therefore, them also, they may be in town, but still, they're busy with their business, like you said. They can't always clear their calendar immediately. Therefore, you also have to give them Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. Because that's the Asman al Dina. They summoned her to Basin, mm-hmm. implying that it was the first time. Omen of Yehuda. We do not set up dates for summons to Beis Din, not during the days of Nisan and not during the days of Tishrei. So Rashi says the reason is because Nisan and Tishrei are the agricultural seasons. Nisan, you're harvesting the grain. Tishrei, you're harvesting the grapes. People are too busy to come to Beis Din during that time. The Rambam learns differently that the reason is because the Yom Tovim are during those months. People are busy preparing for Yom Tov and then Yom Tov itself. Which by the way, so they talk about a number of nafkaminas between those two explanations. Number one, if you're not a farmer, then the Rashi's reason wouldn't apply, but the Rambam's reason would. What about the end of Nisan, the end of Tishrei? What about the days after Yom Tov? The Yom Tovim are over. You're not totaled with the Yom Tov anymore. On the other hand, if it's because of the harvest, you're still busy with the harvest. What if the harvest is a different time of year? Or even actually, they talk about maybe with the Yom Tov thing. All of us know that a couple of days after Yom Tov, you're busy getting your house back in order and putting away your Pesach dishes and taking down your sukkah and so on and so forth. So there is, okay. Also, you can't be Kaveh's man. You can't summon a person on Erev Yom Tov nor on Erev Shabbos. They talk about maybe yes, maybe not. Again, if we say that the reason you're not supposed to is because people are busy with Yom Tov, then that would apply Chalamoid as well. But yeah. You're not busy with it, but still, you're busy with Simchas Yom Tov and whatever, Okay. But you can, for example, you can send a summons during Nisan that you need to show up in Beis Din on a certain date in Iyar, or during Tishrei that you need to appear on a certain day in Cheshvan. No, because it's connected. It's connected ultimately to what we were saying before about doing a din torah when the baal din is not present. Yeah, that's all. It's negated. Malas Shabbos of a boss. Malas Shabbos of like kavinin. However, you do not send a summons before Shabbos on erev Shabbos that he should come after Shabbos on Sunday. My time. The Shabbos are Torah, because he's too busy. If you send him a summons on Friday, he's too busy getting ready for Shabbos, he may forget about it. Mashenkin, so the Rama says, you give him a summons during Nisan to tell him to come, let's say, for example, to come during Iyar. Fine, he may forget 1-2 days. Eventually, he's going to remember. Sometime between when he sent it to him in Nisan and the date that he's supposed to show up in Iyar, he's bound to remember. But from Friday till Sunday, he may forget.
You're going to destroy his whole Shabbos.
Well, you could say the same thing about giving him a summons and Nisan for after you made, but that's not, yeah, we're not worried about that.
We're not worried about destroying someone's Shabbos.
No, come on, Doesn't necessarily mean, just because you're summoning him to Beis Din doesn't necessarily mean that the deck is stacked. Yeah, okay.
Erev Shabbos.
Come on, no. Amar of Nachman, lo yavin and zimna lo levnei kala v'kala v'lo levnei rigla v'rigla. Here's another din. You don't arrange summons for people who are coming for the kala, meaning the Shabbos drasha. You don't tell him while he's there in the Bet Medrash on Shabbos to listen to the drasha. By the way, we expect to see you in Beis Din on Monday, or when he comes for the drasha in Hilchos Regel during the 30 days before Yom Tov. You don't tell him to come. You don't use that opportunity to tell him that to tell him that you're summoned to Beis Din. The reason for it is because you don't. The reason is you don't want to discourage him from coming. Like this, he came to hear a drasha on Shabbos. So he came to hear a drasha on the halachos of Yom Tov. If all of a sudden people know that during that time they come to the Bet Medrash, they come to the yeshiva for that kind of thing, and they can all of a sudden be ambushed with a summons, they're not going to want to come anymore. We don't want that. We want them to be able to come to these drashas. They learn important things there. Therefore, we're not allowed to use that time for that. It just means you have to find another time. You have to find a time when you have to find some other time to send in the summons. That's all. And in fact, for example, when people would come to Rav Nachman on one of these days, let's say the Yom Kala, look, my Baal Din is here in town anyway. Use the opportunity to give him a summons. Amalahu, he would say to them, what do you think? It's for your sake that we gathered everybody together? Don't take advantage of it. However, the Gemara says, but nowadays, that there are cheaters, people who only come, they're not interested in the Zerusha at all. They only come because they figure that, you know what, now I can come and I'm safe. They're not gonna ambush me with it. Chayshina, and then we're concerned about that. Therefore, basically, this is a case where Rav has to use the fifth section of Shulchan Aruch, because they say there's four parts of Shulchan Aruch, and then there's the fifth of Shulchan Aruch, which means the Rav's sense, sixth sense, whatever. He has to know this person. Is this person, Taka, coming sincerely to learn? Then, Taka, you can't give him a summons. Mashenkin, if you're thinking he's just coming because he figures he's safe, then go ahead and give him a summons. So to answer your question, we are worried about his frumkite, but not at the expense of the other person. If we see that he's doing his frumkite in order to prevent the other guy from getting his day in court, then yeah.
Another to remind you can give it to anybody.
No, not anybody. If we know that the guy is sincere, Rob is expected to know his
reputation. I mean, everybody knows what's going on in
there. Okay. Okay, the Mishnah had finished off in the case of the Gazlan who had left property to his children. We said, that if it was a Dovah Sheyash Be'achrayas, then the children are chayav to pay. So we learned before, we had Rami Bachama versus Rava, what Dovah Sheyash Le'achrayas means. Does it mean that he left a karka, or Rami Bachama had explained that it meant the thing itself has a chrayas in the sense that it's something which everybody knows used to belong to this nigdol, and therefore Mishum Tvoid Aviyim, they have to return. And we learned there in that connection a braisa, which we're quoting over here, also Masni Le Rebbe Le Reb Shimon Brei. Rebbe taught his son Reb Shimon in connection with this Mishnah. Loi Dovah Sheyesh Be'achrayas Mamash. The word Dovah Sheyesh Be'achrayas does not literally mean what it usually means, as in Dovah Sheyesh Be'achrayas as meaning karka. Ella, if you're part of a chodesh, but even for example, it's a cow, and the father was using it to plow with, and now the children are using it to plow with, or chamor mechamor achrav, or a donkey, and they're using it to carry burdens. Then also chayav and lahasim if nekved aviyim, they have to return such things because of the covet of their father. So you don't want people to look and say, hey, these guys are using a cow that their father stole, etc. Now we learned the other day actually that Rava did not agree with that. Rava understood, which the halacha is like Rava learned, understood on Mishnah according to a different braisa from Rav Oshia, that Dovah Sheyesh Le'achrayas means that he left them karka, which then the nigdol can collect from. However, the relevance of this halacha is that we said over there also there's a case where the father left them money of ribbit, where these dinim do apply for that. So there also, if what he left them as ribbis is a davar hamasuriyam, something like this, like a cow or what have you, then they would have to return it to shum kavod aviyim.
There's a minion of ribbis.
If he had taken it as ribbis instead of as zayin,
right?
That's, so therefore, this statement over here has relevance as far as that.
But that's not called
a chayus. The point is, Dovah Sheyesh means something that is noticeable. So in the case of Zela, it doesn't matter. Rava said it doesn't matter whether the thing itself is noticeable or not. Either way, we said the children are potter. Either way, Rava said the children are potter from pain. But when it comes to Ribis, when it comes to a different case, if the father had taken the cow or whatever as Ribis, then yes. Okay. Boy Minir of Kahana Mirab. Mita Umesiv Aleha, Shulchan Ba'ochel Olav Mahu. What if we're not talking about an animal? What if, for example, it's a bed, and now the father was using, and now the children are using it to recline on at a meal? Or shulchan ro'echal olav, or a table, and he's eating on it. Mahu, what's the din? I mean, on the one hand, these are things that are inside the house. The whole world doesn't see them, so maybe there's not such bazillion to the father. On the other hand, people come into their house every so often. Anytime somebody comes to visit, they're going to see this table or they're going to see this couch and realize, hey, this used to belong to Pliny and your father stole it. On the loy, Rav answers him, as the pasuk says, "Tem machacham v'yach kamoid." Give something to a chacham and he'll become wiser. Meaning, you can understand for yourself that yes, the same rule that applies to a kara and a chamor, yes, also applies to a mita and a shulchan. The same principle applies. So therefore, they would have to return it according to Rami Bachama. In both cases, they would have to return it with Nekved Aviyim, and according to Rava, only in the case of Ribbis. Okay. Mishnah says. So now this Mishnah and the next one are basically going to be talking about people who there's sort of a chazaka on them that they are gazlonim. That's the connection of it with our pay. Mishnah says, "In potin loy mitevis hamochsin, you're not allowed to make change from the money box of moichsin, which means tax collectors, for reasons which we'll discuss in the Gemara, or from the purse of gaboyin. Rashi explains that gaboyim are also tax collectors. The difference is that a moichis is, for example, like import or export taxes or whatever, like excise taxes or whatever. And gaboyim would mean people who are collecting, for example, head taxes, income taxes, whatever, is gaboyim. The Rambam learns that gaboyim actually means has a different meaning. It means gaboy tzedakah. The problem with them isn't Geneva. The problem, according to the Rambam, with making change from them is when people see you taking change out of their pushka, they're going to think that you're stealing money from the pushka. They're not going to realize that you're just making change. Whereas with the most sin, the problem is the reason that we'll say in the Gemara. The Ein Notban Mehem Tzedakah. Wait. The Ein Notban Mehem Tzedakah. Also, you're not allowed to take Tzedakah from them. Again, because as the Gemara is going to say, the assumption is that what they have in their possession is stolen money, so therefore you can't use it as Tzedakah. In fact, one of the Rishonim, I don't remember which one now, says that basically you don't want them to be able to whitewash what they're doing. You don't want them to be able to money launder, you know, they're going to take it as Gzela and now they're going to use it as Tzedakah. Yeah. But you are allowed to take from this tax collector's house or from in the street. Meaning, so Rashi explains, in other words, for example, from his house, we mean from his own money. We're not worried that that's Gzela, because only what we're assuming he's collecting as taxes is Gzela, for reasons we'll talk about in the Gemara, but his own personal money not, or in the street, again, where it's not being taken out of the money box. There are many Rishonim who learn differently, though. They say the heter to take from his house is only, for example, the kind of thing that we're mentioning in the Mishnah, let's say, to make change, because that's only a hanam mu'etet. We're not going to be gozer that he can't make change from any of this guy's money because of the fact that he's a tax collector. But to take anything that's actual or not from his house, that would also be awesome because we can assume that everything that he takes and everything that he earns is there.
How do we make the difference? How do we know?
Because that's the thing. No, because if it's in the money box, then it comes from taxes. If it's not in the money box, that's the thing. One way of looking at it is any money that's not in the money box is not from taxes. So according to Rashi, there's nothing to be cautious about it at all. According to other Mephoshim, fine, to make change, that's one thing. But let's say, for example, to take food to, let's say, for example, he offers you food from his house. How do you know? He may well have bought that food with stolen money, with money from his taxes, which would be a problem. Yeah, well, money is fungible, meaning, in other words, when money is given, right, it's exchanged for other money, right. As a matter of fact, actually, Tosfos talks about the point that it's true. Technically, as a matter of yish, the owners were probably miyayish on this money, especially as the Rashba adds. It's not like they were going to get back the original coins anyway, even if they were able to get it back from him. So fine, there's yish, there's shinu reshus, but still, Tosfos says it's dover meguna, who it's still it's a repulsive thing that they use this money box or this purse or whatever for keeping the gzela in. And therefore you don't want to allow somebody else to use it for anything, even for making change.
And what's not in the money box and still in the ushers of the government.
But that's the thing. It's not necessarily. It is a zela.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Again, so that's why you have the two different ways of looking at it. Can you take without reservation, or is it that you can only do minor things like making change? Okay. So the Gemara says Tana, we learn in a Braita. However, you can get, if suppose that you're supposed to pay this tax collector something, but less than a dinar, let's say, all you have is a dinar, you can give him a dinar and get change. Because that's considered matzal miyadai. That you're not expected to give away a whole dinar just to avoid taking change from his money box. To that extent you're allowed to in order to get back what's coming to you. So we said Omosin, we mentioned tax collectors. So the question is, why are we assuming that the tax collector is a gazlan and that all the money that he has in his box is zela? But Shmuel said the famous thing, the law of the kingdom is considered the law of halacha. Meaning, in other words, if the king decides, if it's the law of the country that taxes have to be collected, then taxes have to be collected and that's valid off the halacha. The king has every right to it. That's what Gemara is going to answer, but wait. The idea behind Dina de Machos Adina, there's two major approaches that they're showing him take on. One is that One is that the government is entitled to make laws for the benefit of the citizens, for the benefit of the king himself, but for the whatever, for the benefit of the for the benefit of the country. I mean, they accepted him as king. In fact, the Rambam writes that all these halachas only apply if they use his coinage, meaning that they accept him as the legitimate king. So therefore, on that basis, then, he has the right to make laws. The other way of looking at it, a very interesting approach that a number of Rishonim take, the Alter Rebbe also brings this as the only reason in Hilchos Zeila, is the king owns the land. So just as when you own property, you're entitled to collect rents for it, so the king is entitled to collect taxes from people who live on his land. And if you don't pay, he's entitled to throw you out, just as he'd be entitled to throw out a tenant who doesn't pay. So therefore, on that basis, din of the machot din. So they talk about a great deal, there's a huge amount of discussion in halacha about how far does dinah d'machlokes dinah extend? Does it only extend to things like taxes? Does it include other laws does it include other civil laws that the government makes to regulate business and whatever between people? Does it include safety laws, et cetera?
When there's tax in the king, back in the olden days, so if I might get 10% of my fruits or my produce, was before tax or after tax?
Today it's after tax. In those days, it was probably also after tax. I don't know. It may have depended when the king came and took his part. I don't know.
You said that the king owns all the land?
Yeah. So I guess, first of all, one big nachgemina they talk about is, what about an Eretz Yisrael? In Eretz Yisrael, a government has no right to kick out any yid from there. The land belongs to us because the Eibishter gave it to us. Therefore, if it was based on that, then you can't say dinah d'malchus dinah on a Jewish government or a Goyish government for that matter in Eretz Yisrael. Whereas if you say that it's a matter of that the king or the government has the right to make laws for the state, well, then it applies equally well in Eretz Yisrael as elsewhere. I imagine another nafkamina might also be, in a democracy where no one, there's no one king or president or what have you that owns the land, then would it apply, if you use
everybody's shipping in because it officially goes for the roads.
That's a point that Achronim make, that nowadays the taxes don't just go to enrich the king, they're actually used for public works and things of that nature. Then, yeah, everybody are like shutvin. If a person cheats on their taxes, if a person doesn't pay the proper amount of taxes, they're causing that everybody else is having to pay more. So there's that also. Yeah, there's that. That consideration comes into play also, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm aware of it. I mentioned him that today's Gemara would be talking about his job, yeah. Anyway, the dinah d'malchus dinah, so on what grounds are we saying that this malchus is a gazlan? Amar Rav Chanina, Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Shmuel, Amar Rav Chanina, Bar Kahana, Amar Shmuel, but malchus she'en le'kitzvah. You can be talking about a tax collector who has no kitzvah. Meaning, there's two different explanations. So Rashi just says it means elam noto kol chetzoi. So one way of looking at it, it means he takes however much he wants. There's no limit on how much he can collect. The way it used to work in those days, it wasn't everybody didn't pay their taxes individually to the king. The king would decide that a certain amount needs to be collected, a certain amount from some country, each person needs to pay a certain amount or whatever, and you'd have people would be appointed for the job of going around collecting them. Sometimes they'd buy the right from the king, sometimes he'd just appoint them. So here we're talking about the one way of ein lo kitzvah means that there's no limit. He collects as much as he feels like. The other explanation of ein lo kitzvah, he's arbitrary. He makes some people pay more, some pay less, not based on any law, but just based on whether he likes the person or hates the person or what have you.
Is that something that we say that the way it is, or that accepting?
That in those times, that was the reality. Therefore, the reality was that a Mochus is considered a gazlan, unless we know otherwise, unless we know that he's fair about it. Nowadays, it's different. I mean, nowadays, tax collecting is different. So, everybody pays their own individual for the government. And now the presumption is, at least we hope the presumption is, that they're all honest and that it's... really. Also true. Okay. They gave a difference. We could also be talking about a tax collector who appoints himself. So the king didn't appoint him, but he decides on his own. I'm going to go collect the taxes from the people. I'll go give the king his proper amount, and then I'll keep the rest for myself. So again, then you can't consider him a representative of the government, so therefore he can be considered a gazlan. Yeah. He Then there are those who say that this whole discussion about dinner de machos, the dinner versus the different kinds of mosin, is in a different connection. A Mishnah says in Masechta Kelayim, Lo yuvash adam kelayim afilo agabe asar begadim, a person is not allowed to wear kelayim, shatnez, even if it's on top of 10 other items of clothing. Lahavriach bayas hamechet, if he's doing it in order to evade taxes.
Well, how is he evading taxes?
So there's two different approaches that Rishonim say. One is that the Rambam's view of it, for example, is they wouldn't tax you. Let's say when you're passing, like nowadays, when you go through customs from one country to another, they don't charge you for what you're wearing. They charge you for if you carry, you know, what you have in your suitcases. If it's above a certain value, they'll charge you taxes. So therefore, this guy may figure, okay, you know, I want to import this expensive suit made with shatnez. I don't want to have to pay taxes on it. Therefore, I'm going to wear it, and therefore they'll allow me to without paying taxes on it. So even though he's not wearing it for the purpose of wearing, he's wearing it for the purpose of evading taxes, it's still off there as kelayim. The other explanation, which the Rosh mentions, although he doesn't like, is that you're wearing this kelayim in order to pretend that you're good. Let's say you have a case where they're charging certain taxes on Jews that they don't charge on goyim, so you may wear the suit, which is obviously everybody knows is made out of shatnez, so that you'll look to the tax collector like a goy.
Right.
The Rosh has a problem with that because you're not allowed to do that anyway. You're not allowed to pretend to be a goy.
How
would
the goyim know?
I don't know. I guess if you're familiar with the different kinds of fabric, you'd know. I don't know. Anyway, so the question is, what do you mean? What do you mean to evade taxes? Must listen to like Rabbi Akiva. Evidently, our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. The Tanya also because the Braita says you're not allowed to evade the taxes. Again, mechas over here means like import export taxes, that kind of thing. And Rabbi Shimon says in the name of Rabbi Akiva that you are allowed to evade taxes. So, this shlema in Kalach. Wait. No, we're talking about Goyish. Hold on. Don't jump the gun over here. Remember, we already explained that there's two different kinds of tax collectors, right? So, wait. So, Bishlam of the Inn and Kalayim Bahakam Mitzvah. Okay, so I can understand that when it comes to Kalayim, fine. You can have the machlokas could be as follows. Demar Saba Dovashenim Skavin Mutu, Mar Saba Dovashenim Skavin Osu. You can ask the question. This guy is Dovashenim Skavin. He's wearing the suit of shatnez, but not for the purpose of warming himself, of wearing it as clothing, but rather for a side purpose. So, therefore, one way of looking at it might be that it's Dovashenim Skavin and therefore it's Mutter. The other way of looking at it might be that it's Osu. We're talking about if he's necessarily going to be warmed up by a particular ration, everybody would agree it's also. But we're talking about not necessarily if he can actually derive benefit. That's the question. So what do you mean you're allowed to wear? What do you mean that if it weren't for the problem of shatnez, you would be allowed to wear the suit in order to evade taxes? So the taxes are, once they're required by government law, then they're mandated by halacha as well. If it's part of halacha that you have to pay them. So how can you evade them? And again, the same two answers. Again, Rav Chanina bar Kahana answers in the name of Shmuel that we're talking about a tax collector who has no limit or who doesn't charge fair amounts to different people. And in the Shiva, Rav Yane said we're talking about a self-appointed tax collector. Same thing. Either way, that such a person is considered a Goslin, and you're allowed to evade his taxes. So not the official taxes that are mandated by the government, and where there are official government officials for them, but rather these kinds that we're talking about.
When you lie on your tax return,
then it's a violation of dinner tomorrow's a dinner.
Yes.
Yeah. A third one, the ikka de masniyaha. Then there are those who learn this discussion in connection with yet another case. We learned this in Nedarim. Nedarim laharogin laharomim ulamoysin. You can make a neder to harogin, people who are threatening to kill a person if he doesn't give them such and such, or haromin, it's basically gazlonim, or moysin, or tax collectors. You can make a neder to them, shehishal truma, shehishal beis melech. You're claiming to them, for example, this grain, let's say, that you want to take away from me for taxes, is truma. We assume that even these moysin, but we're assuming even these mosim, even these tax collectors, which we're assuming are gazlanim, will respect that, yeah? Or for example, that it belongs to the king, and therefore you can't take it. And you make a neder in the sense we learned there in the Dardim, that's for example. So the guy will tell you, I don't really believe you. So that you say, if what I'm saying is not true, then I'm making a neder, peiros should be offered to me. Now, what do? You have in mind, now usually having in mind doesn't help us. And that over here, where it's an emergency situation, it works that you have in your mind, let's say, okay, it doesn't mean all fruit forever. It means all fruit only for today. It means all fruit that's out of season, whatever it is. So therefore, so they think that you made a true neder, and therefore they'll leave you alone. Meanwhile, you get away with it. No, that ordinarily you have to. That's the point. You have to have kibbutz l'shavim. Ordinarily, though, you'd have to actually stay out the tnai that you're making. But here, in a case like this, where it's dangerous too, then you can just think it in your mind. Yeah. And therefore, it works.
And he's gonna have him whatever they.
They don't know that. Yeah. Yeah, they'll believe it. I guess so. Yeah. Okay. So even though this grain does not really belong, it's not really truma, even though it doesn't really belong to the king, you're allowed to do that. So again, here also you have the same question. What do you mean, v'lamochsin? What do you mean you're allowed to make such a false neder to a mochus? You're not allowed, when he's coming to collect taxes, you're not allowed to pretend that it's not yours in order to get away from paying it. And the same answers. And here we have a third one, which some Mefarshim learn that this next answer that we're going to have refers back to all of these previous cases, and some of them learn that it only refers to this last case, or maybe it only refers to the case of Shabbos. Whatever it is, that is, Rav Ashi Amar B'Moiches Knani. Here's a third possibility. We're talking about a Goyish tax collector. Knani, by the way, the sense has changed. It's supposed to be Goy or Nachri or what have you. So what's the difference? There's two ways of understanding it that Rishonim talk about. Rashi learns over here that it's okay if you're going to be goyzel from him, even if he's legitimate, as in he was appointed by the government, there's still gezel goy, and as long as there's not a possibility of chilul Hashem, because the guy's not going to realize that you're lying, then it's okay, because as we'll be learning now, it's still about gezel goy, whether it's also or mutter. So one way of looking at it is it's allowed as long as there's no chilul Hashem. A whole other way of looking at it is that the Gemara doesn't mean specifically a goy, it means a goyish tax collector we can assume is a gazlan. We can assume that he takes more than he's supposed to, as opposed to a Yiddish tax collector, not necessarily. He may not. If you know that he's that kind that takes more than he's supposed to, then he'd be on the same level as the goy. If not, then not. The Alter Rebbe, by the way, has a whole different explanation of it. That we're going to talk about later in the Gemara, again, and as we go through the sugya of Gezel Goy, and we're going to talk about another concept called Hakar Hava'ot. There's two different things. There's a question of outright stealing from a Goy, like literally taking from him something which by rights should belong to him. And then there's Hakar Hava'ot, which means basically, let's say you owe him money and you evade paying it to him. So it's sort of like this kumase versus sheval tase is the distinction, according to some Rishonim. Anyway, we'll learn when we get to it that there's other nuances in it that they talk about. But anyway, so the Alter Rebbe talks about it like this. If the tax collector is a goy, then regardless, now there's two ways that a tax collector could be operating. He could just be collecting it on behalf of the government. He was appointed by the government. He's collecting it on their behalf. Or it can be that he bought the right to collect the taxes, in which case, basically, he laid out X amount of money for the privilege, and therefore, he's going to be collecting X amount for the king, and then he's going to be collecting X amount for himself to make back what he paid. So the difference is, the Alter Rebbe said, if we're talking a Jewish tax collector, you're not allowed to steal from him, you're also not allowed to do hafkar salva also. If you owe a Jew money, you're not allowed to evade paying it to him. So therefore, it will depend whether this yid then was appointed by the king, in which case whatever the amount is that the king is supposed to get, you have to pay him, and the rest, fine, he's a gazlan. If he takes any more than that, he's a gazlan. You don't have to pay him that amount. Versus if he bought the right from, or no, the other way around, sorry. If he bought the right from the king, then okay, what he laid out for it would be actual gezel to take it away from him. You can't do that. So you have to pay him the amount that is supposed to go to the king, which will go towards him paying off his own expenses. The rest you don't have to worry about. Mashenkin, because he laid out money for it. If he didn't lay out money for it, then if he's taking more than he's supposed to, then he's a gazlan on the whole thing. You don't even have to pay him the amount that the taxes are supposed to be. You'll know. You ask around. You find out. When a person's appointed a tax collector, you make it your business to find out. On the other hand, with a goy, since hafkar hava also is mutter, then it doesn't really matter what the conditions are. If he's taking more than he's supposed to, then he's a gazlan, and then you don't have to. Then you can evade the whole thing. That's the distinction the Alter Rebbe makes. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, that there can be a distinction in this regard in Dinim Mominus between a Jew and a Goy, Yisrael Knani Anas Shabolodin, if you have a Jew and a powerful Knani, a Goy, who come to a Din Torah, by the way, the word Anas over here seems added by the senses, but in the art scroll, in Schottenstein Gemara, they have a long discussion that some Achroinim do seem to learn that it does belong in the Gemara, and therefore they explain that the din that we're going to be talking about only applies if we're talking about a tough kind of goy where it's not going to be easy, where like he himself has previously stolen and whatever from this yid or from other yidden or whatever, and therefore you're entitled to treat him less fairly in his din Torah. But if the word anus was added in by the censors, then it means, never mind that, it means in general. So, if they come to a din Torah, im after yochel zakeo b'dinei Yisrael, if you're able to make the Jew win according to by following halacha, okay, then you should do that. The emeloi, and you tell the goyish litigant, kach dinenu. Those are our dinim. You came to a din Torah. We're following Jewish law. B'dinei knanim, if you find, on the other hand, that the Jew will benefit if you follow goyish law, zakehu, then you should do that also, follow goyish law in the case. But emeloi, and tell him, well, look, kach dinchem, well, after all, you know, your own laws say to do this way. In other words, either way, sort of, give him the short end of the stick. But Chazanish has an interesting vote on it. He says, why talk? I mean, how you talk when you treat a goy unfairly like that. He says, it's sort of a knas on him, because we're talking about a goy who doesn't even keep shevet mitzvot b'nei noach. So it's sort of a knas on him for not keeping his mitzvot. Similar to what we had earlier in the Masechta, in a case of Shur and Nogach, Goy's Shur, the Gor, the Jew's Shur, Jew's Shur, Gor, the Goy's Shur, that also there we treat the Goy differently than the Jew for the same reason the Gemara had said over there, because they don't keep the Sheva Mitzvahs and Nenayach, and therefore the Eivishter took that privilege away from them. So here he says a similar thing. If he keeps Sheva Mitzvahs and Nenayach, then these rules wouldn't apply.
He's telling him, but he's going to say, what are our dinners?
Fine, but the fact is, you're a goy, and the goyish laws apply to you, Jewish laws don't apply to you, and therefore, yeah. The imlav, and if not, what if either way, both according to Jewish law and according to goyish law, the Jew is going to end up losing the case, continues the Braisa. Boy, in all of Ba'akifin. Then you come against the goy with akifin. Actually, says alilos, means like false claims, like false arguments and whatever, evasions and whatever, in a way to eventually pass through the year. I don't know. That's a good question, but it may not. Okay. Well, then maybe that's part of the proof that anus was added in by the senses. Yeah. Divir Rabbi Shmuel, that's what Rabbi Shmuel says. Rabbi Akiva, I'm ain't boy in all of Akiva, and Rabbi Kiddush Hashem. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, you can't do that. Mela, okay, fine, to judge according to Din Torah, according to Dine Goyim, as the case may be, that's fine. But to Gabala, Akiva, to use unfair, or whatever, arguments against him, that you can't do because of the problem of Kiddush Hashem, because you were making Chil Hashem. So the question is, what does that mean? Rabbi Akiva, Taimah de'ika Kiddush Hashem. So what does that imply? Rabbi Akiva is saying, only because of the issue of Kiddush Hashem can you not do that. Holeka Kiddush Hashem boyin. It sounds like if there wasn't going to be an issue with Kiddush Hashem, you would be able to. The problem with that is the Gezel Knani Mishari. Are you allowed to steal from a guy? Which is what this would be in effect. V'atanya, what we learn in Braisa, Amar Rav Shimon, Dover Zedorah Shabbat Kivak Shabbat Mizfirin. Rabbi Akiva Darshan, the following din when he came from Zfirin, is the name of a place. Minayin legezel knani shu also. How do we know that stealing from a goy is also? Talmud Loimar, the pasuk says, by an eved ivri who was sold to a goy, achrin nimka, after he was sold, geula tiyaloi, there should be a redemption for him, meaning his relatives are responsible for buying back from the goy. And the point of geula tiyaloi means shaloyim shechenu v'yetzer. Means you're not just allowed, Beis Din is not just allowed to grab this eved ivri and take him away from the goy without paying for him. And he continues, Yochu Yigloim Olav. You would think that maybe Yigloim on him. So Rashi explains that Yigloim means like to fold over, like to double. You would think maybe on the contrary, then Rashi says, you should allow the guy to charge more than he's supposed to get for this Eved. Talmud Loimar, therefore the pasuk says, V'chishav em kenehu, you should calculate with the one who bought him, meaning didactic em kenehu, meaning you have to be exact with the one who bought him. Tosfos asks on that. Tosfos says, why do we think that you would allow the goy to charge more than he's supposed to? So Tosfos and most other Rishonim learn the other way around. Faket, what it means is, yochol yiglam olav, you would think that, fine, let's say you're not allowed to schlep away the Eved Ivri and take him away without paying at all, but maybe you're allowed to confuse the goy, yiglam loshem golem, like to make him be like a golem, confuse him, claim that you owe him less than the real amount, whatever, maybe you're allowed to do that. So the point is, we see that Rabbi Akiva is saying in this verse, you're not allowed to steal from a goy, because they're not allowed to steal away the Eved Ivri from him. When it's an Eved Ivri, it's a given that there's going to be a Chilul Hashem involved. The goy knows that he bought it. Right, but in other words, Rabbi Akiva was saying it's only because of Kiddush Hashem. But we see here that already the Pasuk itself is saying, never mind Kiddush or Chilul Hashem. Let's say there was a way of getting this Eved Ivri away without the goy knowing about it. Let's say he ran away one night. You're still not allowed to because so Rabbi Akiva is saying you have to calculate with the one who bought it, meaning you have to be exact about the calculation. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is saying across the board, Gezel Goy is Aser. So what are you telling me before? That you can ball up Bakifin in the case of the Din Torah, that you can find legal hair splitting or whatever to make him lose the case. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Lo Kasha, Haba Knani, Haba Ger Tosha. There's no contradiction. One case is talking about a Knani, meaning an Ovid Avodah Zarah. The other is talking about a Ger Tosha. So in other words, a Knani, an Ovid Avodah Zarah, you are allowed to, maybe, but a Ger Tosha, not. However, what do you mean? It says both of them right next to each other in the case of the Eved Ivri. Because the Pasuk describes the next couple of lines the Gemara is going to quote here comes from a Braisa, which we learned in Kedushin, and Rashi also brings it at the end of Parshas Behar, that the whole Parshas Behar is describing the downward spiral of a person who was over on the Dinim of Shemitah. So he winds up having to sell his metalkalin, and then his karka, and then his house. And then he winds up having to sell himself as an Eved, to borrow money, and then to sell himself as an Eved. And eventually, it comes to the point, Lo Lecha, he gets to the point where not only he's so desperate, he can't even sell himself to you, as to a Yid, El Leger, he winds up selling himself to a Ger, Shenem Leger. Lo Leger Tzedek, El Leger Toshav, Shenem Leger Toshav. Mishpachas Ger, the whole pasuk goes like this, V'nimkal Ger Toshav Imach, Ola Eker Mishpachas Ger. So Mishpachas Ger is over to Chavit. Means people who worship idols. So they're the family. The one person from that family became a Ger Toshav. Everybody else remained Ovid Avodah Zarah. And he winds up selling himself to them. So Omer, Oila Eker, and when the Pasuk says Oila Eker, which Eker means like what should be uprooted, Zan Nimka Avodah Tachavim, means somebody who's actually sold to work for the Avodah Zarah itself. Not to worship it, but like to sweep the floors and chop wood and whatever. So we see in the same Pasuk, it's talking about a case of a person sold to a Ger Toshav or to an Ovid Avodah Zarah. And the same rules apply, the same Bechishev and Kenehu, and the same Geula to Yoloi applies to both cases. So what are you telling me the distinction between an Ovid Avodah Zarah and a Ger Toshav?
Even though Yad Yisrael Tekipa.
That's the point. Even though Yad Yisrael Tekipa, you still have to be fair with him, yeah. Ela Amar Rava, Lo Kasha Kan B'Gzele Kan B'Chan B'Havkar Chava Osei. The difference is, this gzeloi, which means actually taking away something from him, like this taking the eved who is in his possession, that would be osur, because gezel, versus hafkara tava osoi, which means, for example, hafkara tava osoi literally means, for example, undoing his loan. So let's say, for example, the guy previously lent you money, and now you're evading paying. You're not paying him for it, and eventually, hopefully, you know, the loan will be forgotten, or he'll die, or and his children, or whatever. So that's a more tax. So therefore, hold on. So first of all, what's included under Afkar Tava also, there is a great deal of discussion among the posts about it. For example, what about, let's say, the goy left the kodesh? Are you allowed to keep it? Would that, on the one hand, passive? On the other hand, it's an actual object which he owns, which is in your possession. Is that considered gezel, or is that considered achkar tavos? But aside from all of that, anyway, the real question, the issue is, basically, when we say that gezel goy oster, ultimately, are we saying it's oster because of the problem of kiddush versus chilul Hashem, or is it that it's actually oster, maybe even minatora? When the Rambam starts discussing Hilchot Gneva, he says it's also to steal, whether from a Jew or from a Goy, and if you're the Rambam, and if you are, you're Oiram Loi Tignova. Meaning, according to him, on the other hand, there are the Poroshim on the Rambam there who understand the Rambam to be saying that with a Goy, it's only the Rabbanim, but nevertheless, it's still, you shouldn't do it with the Rambam. He has a long thing about it in one of his Shuvahs. He says it's also, if nothing else, because you're developing Midah Tzroes. What do you mean? You're gonna steal, even if technically it's Mutter, you're developing the bad Midah of stealing. And there is an interesting point that some of the Mephoshim make, that, like this, you have two different Dinim. gzela, you have gzela, the Torah says loy tigmo. You have gneva, the Torah says loy tignevu. And then you have hakasa ba'ase, would be included under the concept of oishek. Oishek means holding something back that rightfully belongs to the other person, not paying a worker, not returning a halva or whatever. The difference is
that the government?
The government is something else. Dinah demachos the dinah, said before. That's the difference. That's the difference. Here we're talking about an individual goat. The difference is like this. You know, some of Oshim say. When it comes to gneva, the Torah, okay, so the pasuk goes like this. Loy tignevu, loy tachachashu, loy tashakru ish ba'amisa. As far as gezel also, the expression is loy sashik asura'acha, loy tigvo. So the point is like this. If we parse the pasuk like this, loy tignevu, and there's an asnachta there, meaning that's a thought of itself, then it means gneva is also regardless from anybody. But loy tachachashu, loy tashakru only applies ish ba'amisa. And similarly, what Ishma means a person to his neighbor, Amisa means your fellow Jew. Means your fellow Jew. Amisecha means your fellow Jew.
Right.
So, wait, similarly, the process that continues, like Sashik as Re'acha, or like Sigdal, Re'acha again means it is like Re'acha, Re'acha, Kamela. Therefore, that's part of the argument, that's one of the arguments that's made, that therefore, Gneva, Taka, like what Rambam said, may be equally awesome in Atorah, whether the victim is a Jew or a guy. But when it comes to Gzela, or Afkar Sava'asa, or whatever, then different rules apply. So again, Gzela was saying maybe also on the grounds of Chilul Hashem. But Afkar Sava'asa, where there's no issue of Chilul Hashem involved, may be different. The dinner, the technical... Again, if there's a Chilul Hashem involved, then there's no question, you're not allowed to. But if it can be done without a Chilul Hashem, if it can be done without a Chilul Hashem, let's say, again, in the case of the tax collector, you claim to him that this produce belongs to the king, or Truma, or what have you, you make him your neder, he goes away thinking, okay, well, I can't collect from this person. Meanwhile, you know the truth, that you evaded him. That's how cross, which we're talking about before, according to Ravashi's answer, that it was a Moichus Goy, that's how cross have also. There's more of a heter for that than directly taking something from him. And that's the point that we're that's the point we're getting out of here. Okay. He has not to see you. You didn't. You need to squeeze me. Whatever. So you have to be careful in that case to avoid the problem of Chilul Hashem. So we'll finish off over here till the one dot, and we'll continue tomorrow. But Omalei Abayas. Abayas says, what do you mean that Hafkar Sava Asi would be Mutter? Eved Ivri Hafkar Sava Asi. Isn't Eved Ivri basically Hafkar Sava Asi? The goof of the Yid doesn't belong to the guy. It's only his avodah belongs. It's only his work belongs to him. Therefore, that would be taking him away would be the equivalent of Hafkar Sava Asi. And you just said the pasuk says you're not allowed to do that. Omalei Abayas. No, the answer is Rava Latamei. So Rava no goes according to his shit. The Amar Rava Eved Ivri Gufay Kani. Because in fact, Rava holds that an Eved Ivri, his goof is owned by the goy. Not literally the goof is owned by the goy. We learned back in Kedushin that actually a goy can own, that a goy can only own the Avodah even if an Eved Kanani, let alone an Eved Ivri. But he does own his goof in the sense that he is actually, for those 6 years, he's required to work for him. He's not goofy Kanani in the sense, for example, he doesn't need a shtar to go through. But he is goofy Kanani in the sense, we're not talking about that, for example, you lent this guy money at one point, and now you have the money in your possession. The actual goof of the yid, of the Eved Ivri, is in his possession. Therefore, to take it away from him would be real gezel, not hafkas avos. And real gezel, we're saying over here, is osir. Again, the raisa, the rabbanon, as the case may be. There is, by the way, I mean, before we stop over here, there is another gemara in Bava Metzia, so we'll get there in a few months, Gaz Hashem, that also talks about this din of Gezel Goy, and talks about it from a different point of view. There's a whole slew of opinions that we're going to learn over there that say that Gezel Goy is Mutter also. Here we're talking according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that recorded in the Braisa that Gezel Goy is also.
Who is the other opinion?
I don't remember. I didn't look at that gemara, but there's more discussion. In Rav Matiya, in connection with our laws of paying workers. So we'll get there in a few months' time, Bez Hashem, but we'll leave off over here and continue tomorrow with this topic of Gezel Goy versus Torah Goy versus, this is very important stuff now. Yeah.